economist. I've worked at the University of Wisconsin. I do extension, do research and teaching. This is some work. It's basically what you can do with small plot data that often the agronomists or other production scientists make. Nicola Carey is a former graduate student. She works for a farm, Wisconsin Produce Farm. Jamie Wilbur and Damon Smith are both at UW Plant Pathology. And some of this stuff could easily, I didn't put Johnny on purpose,
would be Sean Conley with the soybean on the with Nicola's dissertation or thesis. One of the things that we do is way we can kind of integrate agronomic or agricultural small plot data is I'm going to talk about parameterizing these bioeconomic models, how we can take those, develop models of the ecological slash economic or biological production system and add in the economics. I always like to do it for farm management recommendations. You can go broader where you actually use them to parameterize shifts in the aggregate supply curve. If you do this technology, when you bring in BT corn to the market, how much does it push the total U.S. supply curve out? What's that do to prices? What's that do to social surplus? It's sort of micro foundations for these macro models. I've done that. I did a study on atrazine. Get a sense, atrazine, you lose atrazine, the supply curve shifts back. What's that mean? How many billions of dollars of lost surplus and stuff? And the last one is, this is some recent work, and it's really an alternative to what you guys do, small plot data, to estimate the benefit of seed treatments. You guys do your small plot studies, do all kinds of them. You can only do a few studies per year or place. Well, what else? Just go analyze farm data. Go out and survey farmers. What do you get with your yields, with seed treatments, without? There's a whole lot of technical details. I see the same thing in the cover cropping world. When you go out and survey people, do people who have higher yields plant cover crops, or do people who plant cover crops get higher yields? There's sort of this reverse causality problem. Economists get very worried about that. We did this in a survey of getting at the value of seed treatments, and we tested carefully for that issue. Do farmers who have high yields use seed treatments, or do seed treatments cause high yields? I'm going to do the parameterization.
I was hoping that this is a general process I've sort of developed for analyzing pests and pathogen problems in commodity crops. It's worked out originally with rootworm, some older papers. I've been using it in white mold and soybean, and Nicola with Sean Conley and others, we've been working on soybean aphid. But every time I seem to sit down to write, it never gets written. This is sort of a general model I've used in all those three pest pathogen situations. You've got some measure of pest pressure going on. Then you got control efficacy. You do something to reduce that pressure, and then that reduction of pressure rates yield impacts that then recreate economic outcomes. And in here is, this is set up for soybean aphid. The way we measure soybean aphid pressure is cumulative aphid days. Number of aphids between the beginning and any time times the number of days. Take the average. So if you got 100 now, 200 a week later, you get 150, take times 7. That's your cumulative aphid days. Same thing like you accumulate temperatures and such. So you've got this base pressure going on, and then you've got pressure with seed treatments, with foliar applications. That pressure is reduced, and then you get yield implications, and go over there to profit or revenue. So what I did for Nicola really did is assemble a lot of data from different places. These are small plot yield studies with and without seed treatments, or with and without a foliar application based off of scouting. Sometimes they combine the two. So you got a bunch of different states. These would be the number of site years, so like, you know, one site year might have multiple studies, and so like this, there's 20 site years in Iowa, but there's 37 observations with and without a seed treatment, with and without a foliar spray, and with both, because they did multiple different active ingredients and stuff like that. In total, we come up with about, 588 plus 88, whatever that is, a little over 650 observations of these different treatments put together. So how would we estimate pressure? In the end, you have to have some measure of something. For soybean aphid, we use cumulative aphid days without treatment. Those untreated trials are useful. So what we do is estimate a gamma probability density function. It goes from zero to positive infinity. It has a nice big hump and a long upper tail. And use the uncontrolled plots to get that. It's useful because you know you can't have negatives. So you can't use a normal distribution. Normal distribution has negatives. So we come up with some numbers here. These are like the mean and standard deviation cumulative aphid days within these different regions. I know this might be quasi-international audience, so there's a little map of the states, upper Midwest. Eastern Corn Belt, we lumped together Illinois, Michigan, and Indiana, and then Northern Great Plains is the North and South Dakota and Nebraska, just to get enough observations. These data are extremely variable. I'll show you a picture of what a gamma distribution looks like in a second.
The next step is the efficacy. And all we're really after is when you use a seed treatment or you use a foliar application, you don't get the same result every time. You don't always kill 17% or some number. It's variable. You get, because the environments vary, the efficacy of the compounds vary depending where you are. And so you shift the distribution of cumulative aphid days backwards. And we'll talk about that in a second. So what we do is we estimate the cumulative aphid days with treatment given the cumulative aphid days without treatment. So under years when you have lots of pressure, you tend to still have lots of aphids left over. And so what we do is have the mean and the standard deviation depend on the cumulative aphid days without treatment. So you just, the mean is just some proportion, lambda, of the aphids with without treatment, same with the standard deviation. So you can quickly see what percent efficacy you have and how much it reduces the variability. So this is our results here using maximum likelihood to estimate these. But you can see a seed treatment leaves 63% of the aphid pressure behind. What I mean by aphid pressure? Cumulative aphid days. So if you have 1,000 after you put on this treatment, on average you're going to have about 630 would be your aphid days left over. 36% left with a non-pyrethroid applied in a foliar system, 23% with a foliar pyrethroid, 23% if you use a seed treatment in a non-foliar pyrethroid, that would be with scouting, so you don't apply it every year. And then the seed plus the foliar pyrethroid, you get 15%. The other way to think of this, you're killing 85% of the aphid pressure, you're killing 75%, you're killing two-thirds, you're killing about a third with the seed treatment. These are the standard deviations. Again, it'd be you're reducing the variability. You can see as you get more and more treatments, you get less variability. You're bringing that aphid pressure down, the variability of it. So you get all treatments reduced, the mean of variability of cumulative aphid days. That means they work at different degrees. Seed treatments are less effective. They're put on very early before aphids are really there as much. So there's a timing issue. And then as the time goes on, the titer and the plant decline. So this makes sense. Pyrethroids are more effective than foliar. The other foliar classes, organophosphates or some of the other, there's a lot of other ones. And then two treatments are better than one. Well, these are all pretty intuitive. We just put numbers to it is really what it boils down to. So this is what our gammas look like here. This is to get a sense of what we really do visually. This orange one would be cumulative aphid days without treatment. This would be, take your averages, as I use 2,000 here, just to pick a number with the standard deviation 1,000. So in your field, you could take the data, you'll have some observations, you smooth it out, make a nice little probability density function out of it. And then what happens, you put on these treatments, you shove more and more of the probability mass to the left. And so we'll just take the seed plus the foliar, you can see, you go from the orange, you're shoving it back here to the blue. The mean goes way down. Instead of a mean of 2,000, you're down to 450. The variability goes way down. Does it mean you still can't have a lot of aphid pressure? No, you still can have a lot of aphid pressure. Those upper tails are still there. They're just less likely. That's all we're putting to it. We're quantifying that variability and some smoothing it. And so I think once you have those distributions, you can start making these probabilistic statements that are, I think, are a little more intuitive. So if I knew my aphid pressure, if I could kind of go out and scout, know my aphid pressure, now I can predict, you can't with the seed treatment anymore, obviously, you can't go back and put it on, but it can give you a sense of what you could do with the probability, the probability that the cumulative aphid days with treatment exceeds 1,000, just I picked a number, given that without treatment there was a certain number, so say here 2,000, probability you'll exceed 1,000 with a pyrethroid is about 30%. Here's about 45% with the foliar, and if you had used a seed treatment left in an untreated area, it'd be about 85% likelihood. You know, you can start making these probabilistic statements about how effective you can tell a grower, well, if your base pressure is somewhere in this region, these are what you're going to get for probabilities. Give you a sense of how likely you are going to need to follow up with a spray and a seed treatment. I'm just in time. Well, this is the double ones, and it's just more figures. It's the main concept. You can make these probabilistic statements. The next one is the yield benefit. And what you would do here is you calculate yield different, the yield benefit as a percentage. I'm not a big believer in using bushels because getting a bushel extra of soybean in a year when the average yield is 50 bushels versus 30 bushels, that's a big difference. And then you start moving around the country, a bushel here is not the same as a bushel in Illinois versus a bushel in Iowa, except those Minnesota, all those areas have different yield potentials. So I always like to use percent. So yield benefit is how much treated yield is above the untreated yield as a percentage. So you can start looking at across years. You can pool across years and across locations. And then the aphid days reduction is just the net, the additive reduction. So if you go from 1,000 to 500, you've reduced aphid days by 500. I don't use percentage reductions there because going from 1,000 to 500 is a lot different than going from 2,000 to 1,000 or from 5,000 to 2,500.
those are all 50% reductions, but there's a big difference in the actual press pressure out there. And then I just divide by 1,000 to keep the units sensible.
And just can get by with linear OLFs. And so we did some testing of some different models here, whether we're using a foliar or a seed treatment. And you can combine the two by turning them both on. The big D's are what we call dummy variables or indicator variables. If it's a 1, it's you're using it. If it's not, it's a 0 and it drops out. And so you get intercept terms, alpha 1, alpha 2. It's just the background yield benefit you're getting from using a seed treatment or a foliar application. I'm only measuring aphidates here. Well, there's other insects out there. So what if you're killing wireworm or some other white grubs or seed maggots with your soybean, your seed treatment? That's going to show up in alpha 1. Alpha 2 is you're killing some other pesticide aphids when you're spraying with the foliar. Then beta 1, beta 2, beta 3 are the slope effects. As you kill more aphid, reduce that pressure, how much does yield go up? The threes, alpha 3 and beta 3, is you're testing whether they're synergistic or substitution effects. If you kill the aphids with a seed treatment, you're not going to kill them with the foliar. So there's some substitution effect, or maybe you weaken the population with the seed treatment, and the insecticides are even more effective. You can test for that with the data.
We didn't get those synergistic and substitution effects. They don't show up as important. And we do get intercepts here. I'll have the numbers in the next table. It's up there. 1% yield bump just from controlling something other than aphids. And seed treatments is the average across all those sites. 1.4% of the foliars. And then you get that slope effect. Killing aphids with the seed treatment is, you get rid of 1,000 aphid days, pressure drops by 1,000, you get a 6.6% yield bump for each 1,000 you get rid of, whereas with the seed treatment, or I'm sorry, with the foliar application, it's twice that, 1.2%. And if you use them both, you get the double. If you get a seed treatment and you actually spray on top, you're going to get even more. So the more aphids you kill, the more yields go up, and especially more effective with the foliar than with the seed treatment, because the foliar is at the time when they're out there. This is looking at the same thing now as against the aphid pressure instead of against how much aphids reduce. So if you start out with 2,000 aphid days, where can you get on average? These are all just the averages. Yield increases you would see with each of the different practices, and you can get a sense. You can get up, you can quickly get 3, 4, 5% pretty quickly, depending on what you're using. So the last part now is to put it all together. We've kind of got this model of aphid pressure, how much you can reduce aphid pressure with these different treatments. Slide these distributions around. Now let's put the economics to it. We need a model. You got random aphid pressure, CAD 0. Random aphid treatment, random aphid pressure left after treatment, and then you got some random base yield. And then everything else can be calculated as functions of these under some assumptions. This is just a table of assumptions. Essentially, net returns are just what we call a partial budget analysis. I'm not going to go into the real formal sense of doing it, but it's just price times the yield with each treatment, subtract off the cost of the seed treatment, and then all the other fixed costs of production, for fertilizer and machinery and such. Foliar system, it's going to be price times the yield of the foliar system minus the cost of scouting. I could go take scouting out. I've been thinking we'll see. It won't matter, actually. And then if you spray, you got the cost of application and cost of the active ingredient. Then the other costs of production. Yield with, and then you can, then if the, what's that yield with each treatment? It's just that yield benefit. You got 100%. So if your yield benefit is 3%, you use a treatment, you take 1 plus 0.03, take that times your base yield to get a 3% yield increase. And then you got your spray thresholds here. If you know anything about aphids, you're supposed to use is more than 250 per plant, then you spray as a recommended threshold. This is an aphid day, so you have to accumulate it. So I guess this is if you got 100 aphids for 5 days, you should spray. I just picked a number. It's actually fairly flat in that variable. The rest is just some basic assumptions. I have seed treatment data about $8 instead of your 10 to 15, but I think you might be including fungicides on it. I don't know. This is just the insecticide component. Applications and stuff, they're all $7-$8 an acre. Pyrethroids are a little cheaper than regular other ones. Cost of scouting is about not quite $8. And these are all fixed numbers, you can just shift them around. The way you do is you create this Monte Carlo simulation, you draw aphid pressure from a gamma distribution, then for each draw, you then, with the right mean standard deviation for that region, then you draw your cumulative aphid days from a gamma density function with the right mean and standard deviation based off of what the pressure is. So when you have high pressure, you're going to tend to have higher aphid days with the other treatments. Then you decide to spray or not based off of the aphid pressure left. If it's a if you're doing a foliar system only, how high are CAD without treatment? If you have a seed treatment on, how high was it left over after the seed treatment? Then you calculate your benefits, use the right intercept and slope, and then you get your base yield. You add your benefit to it, 3, 4, 5%. You add that to your base yield, and then you calculate everything all up, and it basically comes down to, did yield go up enough to cover the cost of the seed treatment or the scouting and the application costs? Here's what we get. You can, this is under these sets of assumptions. You can easily, it's a big, long spreadsheet. You just put in different prices and different yields and all that kind of stuff. So these are all preliminary, but we're moving over to the side over here. But you got untreated, seed treatment only, a foliar pyrethroid, a seed treatment plus a regular non-pyrethroid foliar, or then a seed treatment on top of a, or a pyrethroid on top of a seed treatment. All these foliar sprays would be based, assuming you're scouting, and only applying them when they're needed. And you're going to get some numbers. You're going to get, you know, 200, 260, et cetera. What you see here from the grower perspective, you're just maximizing profits. You're going to, on average, these are the averages. Your highest one is right here, doing seed treatment plus a pyrethroid. The other way to think of it is to compare it back to the untreated. So these are the benefit relative to leaving it untreated. So you can see $6, $17, $24, $38. You're adding more money on top of leaving it untreated. Standard deviation goes up, and I'm not, just to talk about risk, I'm not going to say much about the standard deviation. This is running it for each of those regions under these base price assumptions, the $10 a bushel and the 60 bushels per acre average. And these are all the same treatments. Again, this is what this is, what that table we just had, that 6 up to 38, that's what's plotted here. I just reported Minnesota, Illinois, Iowa, Great Plains, and Eastern Corn Belt. And you get fairly intuitive results. In areas where the pressure is low, it's not that valuable. Even when it is valuable, it's still less than $5 an acre because the pressure's not there. This is the average aggregate pressure for all those sites in those regions, not individual farm. Other states where it's highly variable, it's because there's lots of pressure running around. And places like the Great Plains, it's a little in between. And you're talking a net return of, you know, you see if it gets really high in certain situations, you drop the price from $10 down to $8, you can reduce everything by 20%. You increase the price, increase it goes up by 20%. You drop yield from 60, drop it to 20% to 50, or whatever that would be as a percentage, it would just reduce those numbers down. But it's a nice, simple way to parameterize these models. And it's a way to take that small plot data across the years and pull it across and parameterize this model using some simple assumptions. I've done this a lot with node injury scales for rootworm management using a small plot data. The other one is white mold and soybean. That's what Jamie Wilbur just really been taking the lead on. I've just been riding along and just taught her the model, what I do, and we come up with ways of modeling it using a disease severity index. But it's a way to take your small plot data and do stuff with it. So long as you got some measure of pest abundance, pest pressure, pest damage, pest crop injury, and then yields, so you can fit this model. So I'm done. Thanks.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Back a couple of slides, please.
Sure.
This is somewhere next one before that. The addition of the actually either the foliar or the pyrethroid over the seed treatment gives you $12-$14 increase. Just adding a seed treatment by itself is only $6.
Yeah,
but when you look at your AVID numbers, the addition of the seed treatment with foliar and pyrethroid is not that much, not that great. What's
going on here is you're only applying this extra stuff when you need it. And so sometimes what happens here, why you save money, is sometimes you don't spray. So you can get by just on the seed treatment, and then you don't spend the money for a foliar.
That's included. Those are
that's what's buried in here. Yes, okay. This is what's that's the benefit of this is.
So that's rather than foliar pyrethroid, it's a management system.
Yeah, it's really right. A system. Okay. Yeah, and I call all these an IPM approach. It's whether you do a seed treatment beforehand or not, and which IPM approach, which active ingredient classes are you using? That's the way to think of it. The one thing, Gary, this is sort of for you too, is. A lot of growers use these seed treatments, yet there's a lot of pressure from entomologists and others, oh, they're not worth anything. And so I've been having a hard time understanding how to take what you hear from growers and the industry and what you hear from other people in the industry and, like, what's going on, you know. And some of this, a lot of these situations are not that valuable. They're buried in the noise, I think. I don't have the numbers up here, but, you know, $5, $10, $15 an acre is hard to capture that value
in the midst of all the other things that are going on in a field in terms of variability. That survey that's in Pest Management Science, the Hurley and Mitchell paper, I think we come up with about, I think it was $10 to $15 an acre as the value. And the yield benefit's roughly about 3.5%, if I remember right, which matches some of the stuff that Sean's been getting from some seed treatment stuff and other people in other parts of the country have been getting. A 2-3% yield bump is really hard, taking at times the prices to capture that value, subtract off the cost of the treatment. That $10, $10, $15, it's hard to identify that statistically year in, year out across all the other noise going on in a field. Is it the way my machinery worked? Is it my fertilizer process? Is it some other disease? Or, you know, there's just so many other things going on in the field. Yeah.
So you guys mentioned some of your approximate cost for fungicide or seed treatments and where are some of those ranges. What would you recommend for those that are interested in specific product type costs? Where
to find those? I'd ask my local agronomist and my extension agronomist, extension pathologist. That's what I'd ask. The ones I had here were from a GFK Connecticut state, and those are like an average number across for just the seed treatment. Or I'm sorry, the insecticide component of a seed treatment. But like the white mold study, Damon Smith. My understanding is you called around, and got some product prices from people. And then it's application costs, machinery costs. I places like what Gary does with that Farm Doc and the Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Association.
Most of the air, if you got a contact with your local, I'm going to use FS Farm Supply because that's Illinois. Call them up. They usually have a price list that they share with you on all of these plus their application rates. That's usually my starting point.
Yeah. So I considered that for some, considering some economic analysis, and I've noticed that there can be a substantial range from one price from one place.
Yep. Yep. So yes. That's what. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of these models, those
they're
are
all negotiable too.
Yeah. Exactly. It's how soon do you need it, and et cetera. What time? A lot of these, from our perspective, are fixed, and so it's not random. Whereas you get in the other factors are random, so then you get more concerned about them than we do about those costs. Unless you're worried about price risk or cost risk, we're generally more. Those are dominated by yield risk and insect risk and things like that. That whatever, just put $8 in or something like that. If you want more, okay, great, we'll put a $9. But yeah, you want them reasonable. That's what I'm always after. Something reasonable.
You're damned if you do it. If you use FS, some farmers will say I can get a lower than that. You get it from lower than that, and some people will say so.
Have you ever given any thought to trying to add in the economic cost of long-term resistance?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked on these insect resistance management models where you do the IRM and you estimate like what's the optimal refuge rate for BT corn, for example, for corn borer. You need these. What you need for those to work, you need. I'm going to go back here. You need these efficacy functions. How much does BT corn drop the yield? Or, I'm sorry, how much does it drop insect pressure, which then means higher yields? You need those numbers exactly. And then you can start capturing that stuff. But for the seed treatment stuff, no. And those models are, you get the dynamics where you have to worry about across time, and they're just really complicated. And in the end, usually saving it is better than wasting it. But I have not done that with seed treatments or with these foliar insecticides, just BTs.
Any other questions? All right, let's thank Paul.